They are. Well, I have 6:30, so I'm going to call the meeting for the public works facilities. We have first a roll call. We have Supervisor Grady, Supervisor Gentz, Supervisor Frederick, and Dan Esposito. Youth and Governance, Christine Dalton, Dustin Beth. Supervisor Dan O'Day is in Minnesota. He's excused. He's on vacation. Supervisor Kohlmeyer, I also believe, I saw an email to the county board chairman that he's on vacation. I didn't hear from him, but we'll give him a break. We didn't excuse him last day, so we'll excuse him tonight. The next item would be approval of the minutes of the previous meeting, and I believe we have two. Maybe we don't. No, we just have the one.
We have two.
Is it two?
Two.
Okay, yeah. Great. So if everyone's had time to go over those, they can have a motion to approve.
Motion to approve.
I'll second.
Move and seconded to approve the minutes of the previous two meetings. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Youth and Governance. Chairman, committee members, supervisors, youth and governance panelists. We don't have a whole lot on our agenda tonight. A couple comments that I'm going to make. Probably have more to do with parks than anything. We had, back when everyone knows all the work we've been doing out at Kemper Center. If you saw the article in the paper today, and then now there's a banner in the room here tonight, that we're going to have the, what's it called, John Stars? In the
Star
park.
Party.
We had talked to these people last year about doing, and I've done this at the state parks where they bring out the big scopes. They're going to do it out at the Katy Park. What are the dates?
I'm going to be the 20th from 8 p.m. to midnight.
Of August,
yep.
So we're going to want to promote that, and you already started?
Yes.
Promoting, so it's a real cool thing to do it in the state parks once all the lights are out here. And your way out, and these are people that we talked to a couple years ago, in fact, about being partners with us and a couple of things that they originally wanted to do something on it. Bristol's, didn't they? Or not, I mean, Brightwood. So I'm going to go to committee members. Any committee members' comments this evening?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. For the past several weeks, I've paid visits to some of the county park properties, specifically Kemper Center after the big tree damages down there. I've been going unannounced just on my own. I was there yesterday morning about 10 o'clock. And it's really quite a testament to the amount of work the Department of Public Works has done to make that area cleaned up. Tree stumps are out. Debris is gone. I'm surprised you couldn't drag down for weeks and it's basically done, it's put to rest, and so I think we recognize for that. Good job over there. I'd like to comment also for having the preview of this evening's minutes via the internet by Thursday. I received them via email. I think that's a tremendous advantage as opposed to waiting till the snail mail comes. I trust everyone here on the committee to receive your meeting agenda minutes on Thursday email, so thank you for seeing that, Kim. It's appreciated. Those are my comments.
Thank you, Supervisor Grady. Any other supervisors? User governance, anything?
No.
Okay. We'll go on to citizens' comments. On citizens' comments, any item that would have to do with the public works facilities? You would have 5 minutes to speak, and I would just ask that you would raise your hand and be addressed by me. Anyone wish to speak?
Yes.
I need your name and address.
Uh,
Daryl Stone, 129 Highway Z, Twin Lakes. For most of the past 19 years, I consider that I've been proud to be an employee of Kenosha County Highways. Over the past 18 to 20 months, we have seen a significant increase in employees choosing to retire. Very few of them have reached the retirement age. Why do you think this is? This wonderful place has changed dramatically, and now with the election of your new governor, it is getting worse by the minute, in my opinion. Now we are faced with the promise of new policies that will most certainly impact the work experience that we once cherished. I sincerely hope that each of you approaches these new policies carefully and realizes that with each drastic change you agree to, the virtual ship continues to sink. Soon the only employees you will have left to rely on to maintain our state, interstate, county, and town roads are those that never learn to swim or just plain don't care. As members of this department, we urge you to make your final decisions carefully. The final impact will rest on your shoulders. I've had the opportunity to review some of the policies that are in question, and to me it looks more like a dictatorship than in a relationship that we work together. To think that you would expect us to give our life solely to Kenosha County would eliminate the opportunity for any of us to ever take vacation, because the way they're written doesn't say only the winter. It says that it would be mandatory overtime period. I'll never be able to go out to dinner with my wife and have a drink because of the opportunity that I may get called, and that would suffer discipline. And as you go down the discipline path, there's nothing progressive about discipline in that policy. You can pick and choose wherever you choose to begin. Again, I think it's very drastic. I don't think that any of you sitting here would be enlightened, would like to have that same policy on your shoulders. So again, I ask that you take this seriously. Even though the state has passed legislation, it doesn't mandate that you have to. That rests on your shoulders. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other citizens' comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. David Buehlen, 24607 67th Street. And I want to thank Daryl for highlighting that mandatory overtime. I spoke to a lot of you at the last county board meeting about this, and I'm not going to read that all over again because you got the message out of it. But then when I was at the county board meeting, one of the supervisors mentioned how you don't want to rape and pillage our workers. Well, that's what I feel you're kind of doing to us, because you've got good workers down there. It's mandatory overtime. We don't have to go to it. What it's telling me is there's no trust now between you and us, because you don't trust that we're going to come in there and plow these roads. Unless there's one of my fellow workers that can tell me, in the last 18 years I've been here, there's been one, at least once, where them roads didn't get plowed because we didn't show up. Like I said, when you ring the bell, we're there. We've been there. We've shown that. We don't have to go to that level of mandatory overtime. I wish somebody would give me that one good reason why you want to go to that level and put a gun to our head. That's basically what you're doing. You're putting a gun to our head. You're saying when you leave here at whatever time you choose is going to be my normal work day, you're putting a gun to my head saying we might call you. Because if you don't answer your phone, you don't show up, the next morning you're going to be down there in Bill Schenning's office getting reprimanded. And like Daryl says, start at any point in that reprimand list and boom, I'm going to be gone because maybe I was off to dinner with my folks or something like that. I just can't emphasize that enough. And please give that second thought. Give that mandatory overtime second thought. I'm going to give my same spiel tomorrow night to the county board. That's all I can do. I know when I used to be in politics, I always believed that if it wasn't broke, don't try to fix it. Well, that system isn't broke. Don't try to fix it, because you've got good people down there. And even when we had the temps, these 10 temps we had over the winter, they came back. I just don't know what more to say. I can understand the fiscal part of what's in these policies, you know, being who I used to come from. I can understand the fiscal part. But this is a non-fiscal item that is not needed. That's basically what I have to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to speak?
Yeah, Dennis, Mark Montague, 7835 36th Avenue. I want to see some type of support for amendments to tomorrow night's policy hearing that goes in front of the full board. There's a lot of things on these policies that doesn't add up. There's been no discussion between us and management. There hasn't been any discussion between us and management. One of the questions I want to bring up is a fair, impartial grievance procedure. I don't really feel anybody that'd be connected to the county board or anybody else that you bring in from an outside, from another personnel office, could be fair and impartial. The WERC is supposedly loaded with ex-union members, which I really kind of doubt, because right now they're filling the positions with people at our buddies of Scott Walker. So a fair and impartial grievance hearing should be just that, not just run you through and see what the county board feels like. I hate to pick on the administration committee, but right now it's a finance and administration committee. In my 23 years being with the highway department, I think we took two or three wins out of there. There's been a lot of discussion of frivolous grievances. We're not one to write up frivolous grievances. We take the contract serious, and we always have. The next item I was going to bring up, I'd like to see some type of policy amendment to, is the OT. Right now, we're already taking a hit on our pension and health care. And to take that option of us to be called in for overtime, it's going to be another exacerbating situation. We all saw the budget. We all know how many positions were funded for this year. We're asking to get through to the December 31st date till the end of the year, and then you guys can decide what other kind of policy you want to come up with then. We really don't want to take something and have to grind it out later, because that's basically what we know is going to happen. We're just going to have to grind it out. For the overtime, for the mandatory part of it, anybody who wants to sit down and see what call-in sheets from the last few years, management has given those, they've provided it with us for an equal and fair way of doing the overtime. Right now, there's no option out there. We've heard no plans of anything other than if your phone rings, you're going to get called in. We set up a pretty nice system. We also gave the county two or three different options for mandatory overtime. We also gave the county an option for a 10-member second shift that would provide them the coverage that they needed. And one thing I don't think anybody understands is the grinding and out of our job. You can get called in at any time during the night, and then you're going to be expected to do 10, 12, and normally the shift is 16 hours. There's going to be a lot of people tapping out, believe me. We're all dedicated, and it's going to start happening. Another thing to talk about is what I'd like to see is an amendment to some type of seniority. It used to be around here, you had to wait your turn to get something. Now we have people walking in here and they're walking away with brand new trucks. We got people that have been here for less than a year and they're driving around in air conditioning. It used to be a situation or a placement that you'd wait around to get a truck. And when that guy finally retired, you were dying to get it, because you were dying to get the section, you were dying to get the vehicle, and you'd hold on to it and you'd take it. And you'd take some pride in it. I guess that's got a little bit to do with the truck assignment thing, but the seniority and the overtime, the fair and impartial grievance hearing. So what I'm asking for is for you guys tomorrow night, if somebody really feels the need, and I hope somebody does, that we can support a couple of these policy changes. There needs to be a couple of amendments addressed in the overtime, the seniority, and the grievance procedure. There'd be three of them that stand out. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Anyone else on citizens' comments? Yes, sir.
Nick Casmer, 6517 94th Avenue, Kenosha, Wisconsin. I want to speak on pretty much the same things Mark spoke on, so I'll be brief. There's really three areas where we'd like to see significant amendments to these policies, specifically the overtime. Right now, employees get time and a half after 8 hours of work, and they get time and a half on weekends and time and a half on holidays. Well, that's not true. They get double time on holidays, double time on Sundays. We recognize, obviously, the financial straits the county's in. we're not arguing about getting rid of the double time. We think that that's something that should be done. However, we would like to keep the time and a half on those specific issues. Under the Fair Labor Standards Act, which is being proposed, employees would have to work 40 hours in a given week before they'd earn overtime, plus their vacations, sick time, funeral leave, none of that would count towards hours worked. Another issue we'd like to see something changed on is seniority. Seniority, I think, whether you have a union contract or not, is something that I think all employers should give credence to. There's easy areas to use it for. Vacation picks is a simple one. We're not asking you to allow the whole workforce off. In the past, it's been 14 members. If that's what works in the future, that's what works. But at least if 14 guys want to go, 14 guys or gals want to go and do something during hunting season, it's the 14 most senior people who apply. Layoffs is another area where that could be used in. A truck assignment, like Mark talked about, is another area where that's easily used for. Third area is an arbitrator for a grievance proceeding. Like it or not, typically when we've gone to grievances here in Kenosha County, I'd say if you look back the last 20 years or even during my brief tenure, I think we probably got about a 50% split. So we won some, we've lost some. And all I've ever asked is when I go to a grievance hearing is that I feel like I get a fair shake, that my employee feels like they get a fair shake. I think that happens when you actually have a legitimate neutral in the room, okay? I don't think the Corporation Council from Racine County or from some other employer is a legitimate neutral, for the same reasons that I don't think if I brought somebody from AFSCME down here, they would be a legitimate neutral. I think it should be a legitimate arbitrator who knows the system, knows and has no bias towards anybody. The last issue I want to talk about real briefly is the truck assignment. I think I see this as a safety issue. If you're assigned to a specific truck, employee knows how that truck works. They drive that truck every day. They know how the wings work. They know when they're plowing, how it turns. If you start moving people between these trucks all the time, I think you're not just taking the general work standards down, meaning these people aren't going to be able to do their job as effectively because they're trying to focus on how the truck's working. But you're also dealing now with a situation where they're not used to the way the wind works. They're not used to the way the truck turns right, truck turns left. It's my understanding that you guys aren't going to be doing anything on these tonight. I would ask that we please see some amendments tomorrow night on the county board floor. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other citizens' comments?
Hi, Dave Holtz, 43 14 47 Avenue. I should have wrote it on my hand. I remember it. I agree essentially with everything that's been said thus far by those three guys there. I'm trying to figure out in my brain the last 18 months what I did wrong. What was my crime? We were handed tools by the governor, and tools, the difference between a tool and a weapon is usage. And I can see that we're in financial problems and a lot of these things need to be addressed and dealt with. But seniority, truck assignments, all those things, they have no financial advantage to the county. And in fact, it's my belief that it will cost just time alone if I have to inspect a new truck every night. And cart all of my, in my truck, I'm in 174. And I've been over this before. I keep everything I need in there. I've got my rain gear right there in front of the truck. In the winter, my winter readiness is my bright yellow jacket. It's got the stripes, the whole bit. That's already in there. Two pairs of gloves, because you got to go out and dig the truck out. A pair of gloves gets soaked. Happens every time. All of my paperwork material, all my masks, all that's ready to go. Now, I'm not a jet pilot. I won't pretend to be a jet pilot, but when I get the phone call, I come in. And with an assigned truck and an assigned section, now I did this. I served as the night watchman for 5 years. And the acting foreman would be on the road checking conditions, and I had my list of people that he wrote out that were coming in and what their assignments were going to be. And more often than not, it was your truck, your section, got any questions, call Randy. Got any questions, call Kenny, whoever happened to be on. And it was like a clock. all the little cogs got into their part of the machine, and they went out and did what they had to do. And that sort of thing has worked. It worked on Groundhog's Day. A great number of us slept on the floor, not very well. But we did what had to be done to get the job done. And that's after 18 months of shelling. Okay, and by shelling, I mean, I didn't always get up in the morning with eager anticipation to come to this job. But I was getting paid, so I was properly motivated in that direction. I would get to work and do my job. But never before these 18 months did I awake in the morning with dread at having to walk down that sidewalk there and go into that building, because what's it going to be today? And as a man said in the Judiciary Committee meeting the other night, our guests at the detention center have more opportunity to grieve their conditions. They can write it out, and I'm going to quote it here, on a piece of toilet paper, and it gets treated with more respect than we're getting right now. It doesn't help the county save money to beat its employees into the turf, and I feel that's what's going on here. The money part of it, I can live with that. Everybody has to. It's tough times. I get it. But this department's been damaged. And seen some amendments on a couple of these other issues, like the seniority and the truck assignments and the overtime. That's a good foundation. That's a basis for going forward and creating a unit again. Because right now, we need a unit. It's us and them. And whether it's conservative, liberal, management, employee, it doesn't matter. The one thing we've all got in common, except maybe youth and governance, but I don't think you're getting paid. Whether you were elected, appointed, or hired, we're all here to serve this county, and I don't see that happening with this setup the way this is. That's all I got.
Thank you. Anyone else under citizens' comments? If not, I see no one. Citizens' comments are closed. We'll move on to Gulf Highway and Parks. Old business, none. New business. We're going to have a discussion. The policies for 2011 for the next 5 months were at the last county board meeting. We're referred to this committee for discussion if you wanted any discussion. So that is the item, the interim employees policies for Local 70, if there's any discussion from this committee. You've all had a copy of this. We all had it from our last meeting that you received a new one in your packet this week. So anybody from the committee?
I have a comment. We're going over this again tomorrow night, so we're just going to have at least dip our toes in the water here a little bit. As far as administration goes, Mr. Sesma.
Hold it. Everything comes through me.
Through the chair to Mr. Sesma. What is the administration's policy and feeling, use the best you can determine, in terms of truck assignments and the rationale for what we see in front of us here?
Well, there's a couple issues with the truck assignment. The biggest one has to do with the cost involved in operating trucks and the flexibility that management has assigning trucks because of the operating costs involved in the trucks or any of the equipment. For example, we have like five Mack tandem dump trucks, identical trucks. Well, the operating cost of those trucks actually varies from about $29 an hour to about $75 an hour. And we can have two trucks side by side, same truck, widespread of operating costs involved, but we don't have the flexibility to pick which truck. If the employee that's available is on that $75 an hour truck, that $75 an hour truck is going out. And you know, we're basically losing that difference. And you multiply that over and over and over and over, it's a significant amount of money. And it's not, that's just an example of all the equipment that we operate. We have trucks that, you know, the amount of hours that are put on every year are drastically different. There could be 300, 400, 500 hours a year different in the both the cost the initial cost and then the long-term investment that we have in those in the, trucks and equipment, we have no flexibility in controlling that. So there is a huge financial consideration in that assignment of trucks. And
so what you're telling me is finance is number one. That's the
absolutely.
In terms of what has been in the past collective bargaining agreement, how were trucks assigned under that situation? Was that negotiated through collective bargaining? Was it still administration having a say? How has it been up until this point?
Under the old scenario, there was an opportunity for all employees to post for a different truck, and then that typically the highest seniority person that posted for that truck got that truck, and they the employee and the truck were tied together and basically didn't part.
Regardless of season, regardless of job, regardless of...
Correct.
And that was been basically, so this issue then is really tied into the seniority issue, at least in the past negotiated contracts. It's been an issue of truck availability along with seniority. So they're kind of linked together, is that the thing?
They're linked together because the highest senior person that would host for that particular truck would be awarded that position.
Other issues you have, we have the issues coming up about safety and so forth. Your claims made that it's safer to have the same person operating a truck. Do you have feelings one way or the other on that?
I think it works both ways. I agree that there's some advantage of being familiar with a vehicle, but I don't think there's a great difference between any given vehicle that an experienced person couldn't get used to very quickly. But there's also I think what's important is a check and balance, and having the same person in the same vehicle constantly. There's not another set of eyes on a vehicle that's going to see things, perhaps, or hear things that same person doesn't see all the time. So I think, from that standpoint, it does work both ways, and there is an advantage of having another set of eyes and ears and operating habits use those vehicles.
So if you could just give us a random scale. This is a scale here. 10 would be extremely different in terms of the way trucks have been assigned from what they've been in the past. That would be a 10. 1 would be there'd be virtually no change from what we've had in the past under the collective bargaining agreement. Based upon what we're looking at here with this agreement, can you give us and the people in the room just kind of what you might envision in terms of how different or how similar it would be to what it's been in the past?
Well, rather than giving you a range, if I could, I'd like to maybe explain it by season, because I think it's very different in the winter season than it would be in the summer. In the winter, I would still like to see the same basic system that we have had in the past, where we have a truck and a person assigned to different sections throughout the county, whether there's different county sections, state sections, interstate. It's important from an operational standpoint to have a certain truck in that particular area, because there are there's differences in the different types of trucks. There's advantages to having a certain type of truck in a certain area. And then there's advantages to having a person that's very familiar with that area in that section. So I think from an assignment standpoint, we'd be looking at something very similar in the winter. In the summer, it's a little bit more wide open, and where we definitely need the flexibility to adjust to everything that we had to do in the winter. In the summer, then is really our time to make those adjustments, and where the flexibility and truck assignments and equipment assignment really plays a larger role.
So if I'm understanding this correctly, what you're saying is for the summertime, you feel you can do better with this type of arrangement than the old collective bargaining due to the flexibility and the vision.
Year-round, but it's more important in the summer, I would say, yes.
That's what I want to touch on, Mr. Chairman.
I guess we're going to agree. Any other supervisors any discussion on the employment policies?
Through the chair, Mr. Sisler. I'm trying to understand this. You say we got two Mack trucks, one that's operating at $30 an hour and one that's operating at $75 an hour. Can you explain that to me? Is that wage issue? Because to me, I'm kind of sold on the fact that familiarity with trucks and sections is better off for safety. I think it's better off for efficiency. I'm trying to grasp this. I had quite a long talk with Bob Rito about this. Each truck is assigned to a section, correct? Or is that just in the winter time?
Just in the winter.
Okay. So I guess my thinking is, if John Smith has truck 174, and that's his truck, and he's obviously knows the ins and outs of that truck, you put Gary Jones in that truck that's never been in that truck, I got a little bit of an issue with that. One, with safety, and two, with efficiency. You know, I mean, I kind of understand that, but I want to get back to the $30 to $75 when we got two Mack trucks that are the similar trucks on the road. Can you elaborate that for me, please?
There's a number of factors that go into the operating cost of a truck. I mean, you have the fuel, the maintenance involved in like lube and oil and that type of thing.
We got the exact same trucks, you're telling me.
Mm-hmm.
Exact same year, different year models, or is that?
Yeah, no, they'd be different year models.
Okay. But we got the exact same trucks rolling down the road. I need to wrap my mind around, you're telling me I got a $30 an hour truck and a $75 an hour truck, and you need to explain that to me so I understand it, please.
Yeah, and like I said, there's all these different factors that are involved, you know, from a repair standpoint to a routine maintenance standpoint. There's depreciation involved. I have the report, and you're welcome to look at it, and you can see that the operating cost of these different trucks vary widely. It goes from $29 to $74.72, and everything in between. It's just the nature of the beast. That's what, you know, there's all these factors involved in maintaining and operating a truck, and that's what we have to live with in the type of operation that we have. And that's just the way it is.
That's still an answer, Michael. I mean, I'd like to get a contact.
I might be able to help.
Okay.
If you have a truck that we own, free and clear, or one that we just bonded for capital improvements or something, and it's Pawhead County Highway, that doesn't cost us near as much. If we have a truck that we have bonded for, we try to stick it on the state road because the state's paying for the plowing as compared to Town of Randall paying much less. So you would have an individual price of any piece of equipment on the highway. A lot of variance.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Supervisor Frederick.
Through the chair, I'll start off with this. With the grievance process, I can see where they're coming from about impartiality.
Who are you addressing? Or do you have a question?
I have a question. Have we just explored the only option of the person coming down from a state county corp counselor, or have we explored other options as well to bring somebody down who's impartial? Because I don't see where someone who's come from Racine County dealing with this would be that impartial. I just wonder all different options.
I don't think we would explore all the options, or that's not something that's been decided on. I guess I'll say, Diane, do you want to answer anything there, or Lorette?
Yeah.
Mitchell?
Yes. Thank you. The new law says that we have to put this grievance process in place within the next 4 months to supplant what was in place in the collective bargaining agreement that said that you had to have an arbitration process. Now, this grievance process, according to law, calls for an impartial hearing officer. This procedure that's been provided to you in your notes, what's been described to me is that the county is seeking to adopt the procedure that says impartial hearing officer in accordance with the law, but we haven't really made the decision yet whether we will be using the WERC arbitrators or where we're going to find those hearing officers from. We do know, however, there was initially quite a bit of discussion about whether someone from the inside could be impartial, and I believe there's case law that says that's not fair. That's not a fair hearing officer. So we understand what the arguments are. Just we haven't made a decision how that system, where those arbitrators are going to come from, for the hearing officers.
Anything else, Supervisor?
Yeah, with the mandatory overtime, what instances would that be used, and would the employees get any warning on that? Because I've heard worst case scenario of them being out and being called in, but that would only be in the case of snowstorms, if I'm correct.
Correct.
Is there other instances where that would be needed?
The most obvious is snow. So
right.
That's the only call of it for moment. So it would normally be a snow emergency.
That would be the only scenario where they would be called in? Or?
Well, unless you had a storm like we had, but no one was called in for overtime at the Kemper Center. You know, they worked a week and a half then.
Mm-hmm. With vacations, why not use seniority? It doesn't say it in the policy, but that would be the one way with time off and then with vacation time that the person who's been there the longest, that they requested, is it just by random, or how would they be doing the vacations for this?
How they do it now is they sign up. And from everything I've seen for 2011, that's not a factor because everyone's that sign up has been approved. So what we're looking at is the interim, if you look at the interim policy. So it's not a factor at this time.
Okay.
I just wanted to report that I did get a phone call from Supervisor Haas, and Haas said he was unable to attend tonight because of illness, but he wanted me to reiterate the fact that he's very much in favor of continuing with the truck assignment the way it is, and he felt that for reasons of safety, and particularly in the wintertime, knowing the zone and knowing the truck that you're plowing snow with and those types of things, he thought that was very important, that those people who are operating those trucks in those zones that know those highways would be assigned to those areas. So I wanted to reiterate that. And through the chair, for Mr. Sipsma, it sounds like it is your intention that even though it isn't specifically stated in the, because you don't have a contract, or it's not going to be in the policy, but it sounds as though you will continue to keep those people in those zones with those trucks when it comes to plowing snow.
There most definitely is an advantage to have a certain truck in a certain area and then have a person assigned to that area also, yes.
Okay. And one more question. The way they do it now, are those trucks, say when someone retires and that truck is available and that zone is available, it's based on seniority and how you would get assigned to that.
Correct.
Do you have any idea what the future is going to hold when that scenario takes place?
I don't. To me, a logical way to do it would be to look at some form of qualification-based selection for each assignment. But right now, there's been no decision made on that at all.
Thank you.
Any other discussion from any supervisors?
The Chair of the Appropriations Council. This is the bottom of page one. Article 1 recognition, the last two lines on the page of the budget. The county shall deduct from the first paycheck of each month certified by the treasurer of local sovereign as uniform duty of all union members from the pay of each.
Hold on.
He's reading collective bargaining agreement.
Collective bargaining agreement. Page 1.
Our discussion is on 2011 policies for the Department of Public Works.
So can you touch upon it? I just want to know the genesis of this in March.
Are you talking about fair share and how the county will no longer be collecting the dues?
Yes, I want to know if that was the county's intent to go through with this or if that was something that was mandated by the state.
All right, you're going to have to hold on here. That's not on our agenda. We're on these policies.
No problem. Okay.
Everybody, we're just on this. Mr. Beth.
I have a question for Mr. Sipsma. So do I ask it from you?
Yes,
so through the chairman to Mr. Sipsma, I'm just confused about the safety issue that everybody's addressing, that one truck. They know that one better than the other ones. Are all of the trucks addressed in the employee orientation? They should know most of them. But I'm just confused about the safety issue that everyone's addressing.
The difference between the different trucks is not so great that I think any of our employees can easily operate any of our trucks with very, very minimal amount of orientation or experience. They're all I'm not quite grasping this whole safety issue with driving trucks either. I think all of our employees are very skilled, they're experienced. I think they could get in any truck and basically do whatever is necessary to accomplish whatever tasks they've been given in any given truck.
And then the second question is, I understand the area of assignment. The specific trucks in each section, are they assigned to a specific area? Say, for example, the truck 175, it's assigned to the highways, for the main state highway. Mm-hmm. And if we were to have a snowstorm, truck 175 would only be assigned to the state highway. They couldn't patrol anywhere else?
No.
So they could go to a different area with that same truck?
Absolutely, yeah. That's the way we operate. I mean, there's got to be enough flexibility in our operation to change assignments at any given time, to either help in a different area, or sometimes one truck will be assigned two areas. If we have a 1-inch snowstorm versus a 10-inch snowstorm, and a 1-inch snowstorm, maybe one truck can handle two areas. There's a lot of flexibility that's needed in truck assignments.
All right. Thank you.
Supervisor Singer.
Thank you, Chairman. I guess my first question would be, why are we requiring mandatory overtime through the chair? I don't know who developed this policy, or if it did it come from the departments, or did it come from where? You know, I don't know where it came from. So
it sure didn't come from the committee. I'm sure it came from the administration in one form or another.
Okay. I guess who can answer me? Through the chair, then? I guess Diane.
I'll ask Diane. Person.
I think that there has been a need, a fear, in essence, on part of the director that at times times, he will not have enough employees available to plow snow. That, in addition to the fact that we were offering financial incentives to get people to sign up to be on a calling list. And in spite of all of that, there's still, it rang through very clearly during contract negotiations that Mr. Simpson was concerned that he would not have enough employees to plow snow.
And this has happened in the past where we haven't. I thought I heard from people tonight that we got the snow plowed. And apparently there were some difficulties in getting that done. Overtime. I have a real concern about the overtime and the way we stated it, because, and I know we're not talking about policy number two, which is not on your agenda, but it is a policy thing, and I think it's important to develop policy for everyone in a unified manner. The jailers actually, or the Finance and Administration Committee, put it on and changed it back to the way the department wants it. Because obviously, from some of the comments that I've heard from Mr. Simpson tonight, that it wasn't all developed by the department itself, but by administration. And so, his indication that he intends to keep it one area, one truck, one man in the winter time, but have flexibility at different times. I'm concerned as a supervisor that we develop our policies in a uniform manner. I know there are some specifics to certain jobs, like a truck or this or that, that aren't going to apply to other, to a jailer. Obviously, most jailers don't have trucks to deal with. So, overtime is overtime. They indicated that over 8 hours would be overtime, not going to 40 hours first. So that would be one of the first things I would say, is that we need policies to be uniform. And I'm glad it's policy number one instead of number two, because that way at least we can talk about this, because they felt in the committee that it was important enough to change it for the jailers. And I guess through the chair, back to Diane again, is there a problem with seniority right now? It seems to be a system that works and has worked for a long time. Why are we insisting that we get rid of seniority in holiday, vacation, job assignments, things like that? Why do we want to eliminate that?
I'm not so certain that we are completely eliminating seniority. As you know, these are internal policies, and as we move forward, once we get these approved, we will start working on general policies for the county. I think in some cases the department has expressed interest in using seniority for certain issues. Let's take posting for a job, everything else being equal. As we look at skills, knowledge, skills, and ability, we look at years of service, we look at performance evaluations, those will be not currently being conducted, those will be conducted. We'll look at absentee rates and things like that. Everything, all those things being equal, certainly seniority will be a factor in that decision. So it's not that they're eliminating seniority, it's just we need a bit of flexibility moving forward in certain areas.
So you're basically minimizing the effect of seniority.
Yes, currently the way the contract is written, or the time that it was drafted, which was well before my time in county, seniority in job postings, again, for example, was not the basis of that decision. I actually went through two arbitrations and testified at both of those arbitration cases about certain past practices and how we fill jobs. We prevailed in one of those cases, and we didn't the other. So it has been through arbitration decisions that we actually have seniority as the basis for promotion. So if you looked at the contract right now, it's not strict seniority. Again, it's by an arbitration decision that seniority prevails. So we are looking back to gaining some flexibility in making some of these assignments.
Okay, so that will be a part of it going forward. As far as policy. Or do we need to actually put it in the work rules? And I understand these are temporary rules until we get the rules for everybody out, but you know, I definitely want to see the overtime thing changed, because that's real blatant, because one committee changed it on policy two and it didn't change it on policy one. And I apologize again, and as I did in the county board, I wasn't at that meeting. I wasn't even at the last meeting for judiciary and law because I had previous engagement. But I fully intended to come to this meeting to discuss the issue, and I've talked to a lot of people regarding this. So, you know, I think it's important to sit down and talk with the unions and get in their positions on it, and that's why I pushed to have this discussion in the committee member in the committee meetings. You know, I think it needs to be out there and discussed, get our feelings out. A lot of times there's different quirks that may come out of this, but instead of just, you know, ramming something down people's throats, we got to hear what they want, and that's the only way of having it open. That's why it has the rule that it has to be on there for two reads. Give us time to really contemplate what's in the best interest of the county as a whole, not just whether it's in the best interest of an employer that may want, you know, feel that it's financially better for the county, or the workers that feel it's better for their side of it. I mean, we have to look at the county as a whole, and that is the county, okay? All of us.
Mr. Yeah. I'm going to keep you back to this Department of Public Works policies here. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you.
I need to make your points on that.
Great. Thank you.
But we'll stop it.
I think I'm done on that. The truck assignment, you know, I'm satisfied with the truck assignments for the winter time, if you could at least put it, you know, give them priority somehow to the trucks in the other periods of time, unless it's necessary. I mean, it sounds like his intention is to run it fairly close to what it is right now, but with some modifications. So, thank you, Chair.
I may help you out here and show you something about them tomorrow, and finally come up with some good thoughts on it. Countywide policy is very difficult to do. The one for highways here is driven by the state cutting us $267,000 last month for this year. So that overtime money is much more important here than the jailer's money is, because we're still housing a lot of inmates. That overtime money is...
You understand my point. Policies are better off if it's a situation where we can do it.
Where
the revenues come from, it shouldn't be a part of it.
Okay.
There was a time when we got a lot of highway money, and I remember that we balanced a lot of budgets with highway money. You know, so it goes both ways.
Right.
And we may have to put money into the jail system.
Okay,
someday.
We're not debating here. Okay. I'm just trying to help you so you can do some homework before I come up with that answer.
All right. Thank you.
If you want to make a motion of it.
Okay.
Anybody else?
What we're looking at here, this document, resolution number one, is this really some type of interim setup? I mean, is this a work in progress where this is going to get us from point A to point B, and this is just like a transitory stage, or is this going to be an end document?
This is a 5-month document.
5-month document.
That's it.
So my question revolves around, when we see excessive absenteeism on the bottom of disciplinary suspension and on discharge, do we have that quantified to any extent? Is that, you know, something we have a handle on, or are we using some type of past precedent, or is that subject for interpretation?
Because we have so many different departments, and either that's a county-wide policy that you're looking at there, it's difficult to pinpoint. We do have excessive absenteeism at Brookside, which differs than the absenteeism rate here at the highway department or at human services. So, again, what we haven't been looking at was a broad policy. The policy applies county-wide. Each department or division then can have their own individualized policy for absenteeism.
and that will be the end game. That is how we'll eventually go. So this right here that we're looking at here, although it says Kenosha County Division of Local Highway 7, this is basically just a general format that has to be adapted to each specific work group.
Our intent, as the first of the year, is to have proposed and adopted by the county board general rules that will cover all county departments and employees.
And this is the template for it thus far?
Not necessarily. Remember that Local 70 is operating without a contract right now. So we had to have something in place, quite frankly, even to get them paid something other than an hourly wage. And without county board approval, we can't do that.
Any other discussion on this? Thank you very much. There you go. We'll move on to Monday activities for parks. Mr. Rudy.
A little update what's going on down at Kemper. We haven't been down there at all last week. We still have three large stumps. We're working on borrowing the loader that the sheriff has right now. Move those out of there. Two of them got to go, and one they want to keep for a memorial. Still working with a consultant to put together a scope of work for the roof repairs and related building repairs. And I just got the estimate for the wrought iron fence today, and that's over $4,000. Again, I believe we have a $5,000 deductible, so the fence and the building repairs will all fall under the insurance, so we're going to be on the hook for $5,000 to start with. We got somewhere between 10 and 18 trees still standing down there. I don't know, a couple of them might be able to be salvaged, but by the looks of most of them, they're probably never going to amount to anything in the future by what's left of them, so I'll probably end up having to take them down, hopefully early winter. I've been working a little bit with Barb Larson to put together a committee for reforestation. I know Kemper's Building and Grounds Committee has went ahead and took a look at what trees they lost and wrote down those varieties. Hoping that that's something that they can replace, maybe not necessarily in exact same spots, but keep those varieties there because of their status as an arboretum. We are looking for a certified arborist. We're hoping that that person will volunteer their services. The youth group is still going at it. They've been working on trails out at KD and a lot of trees at Petrifying Springs to plant, and I just found out today that they're going to extend their time with us by 2 more weeks, so they'll be here, I believe, through till the third week in August. Out at KD Park, the Eagle Scout finished the kiosk. We still had to put a padlock on it and start putting information in it. I think he finished it not last Saturday, the Saturday before. He came out and installed the door with the glass and the lock hasp. The only thing again there is to, you know, to mention to folks about the star party. We have been advertising it. We'll probably try and get a little press release in the paper and see if we get Paul Kern to talk about it on the radio. Movie nights are going good. We're not getting any huge crowds, but we're averaging right around 40 folks. We did finally find a concessionaire to lease out the Silver Lake concession stand too, and so far he's been doing pretty good. He's got a pretty decent menu and pretty reasonable prices. I went over there last Friday and had a chicken pita that was pretty darn good for $4. So that's about it. The only thing is I didn't have any minutes or financial reports from the Pringle Nature Center.
Thank you, John. I did ask John this evening the last date scheduled on the sign that the county executive had a print out there for people being able to use that KD Park was early September. So I asked John to discuss it with him. Because the best hiking months naturally are October, November. We'd like to keep that open in the think, but I have John check with the county executive, see if we can extend that into the fall. Thank you, John. We'll move on to Mr. Dreyer, update on Monday activities for golf.
This month we had the ladies Kenosha County Open at Petrifying Springs on Saturday. We had a week-long junior county open, July 28th through the 21st, or July 18th through the 21st. And then we had the Kenosha County Open for anybody, which was this past weekend. All three of the tournaments really went well. Everybody had very positive comments about the course conditions. We were down some in participation this last weekend at the Kenosha County Open because we hit a bad weekend that Scrubbia Creek had their member guest, and there was another course with another tournament that took some of our players. So next year we are going to be moving up one weekend for the Kenosha County Open. Hopefully that we can recapture those players from 2010 and get more participation there. On a side note, Bob Tierney, he's our first assistant clubhouse manager. He won the tournament. He shot 218 for a three-day tournament, so that was great. Sales in July were a little bit down compared to last year due to some of the extreme heat and the rain that we've had. July was reported that was the fourth hottest July on record, and in Chicago area it was the wettest July on record. So we still are diligently controlling our expenses. The revenues and rounds were down a little bit from last year in July. We are not going to be replacing the worn-out water line from the Brightondale maintenance shop well. We priced it out that we can get two new wells, one for the clubhouse and one for the pavilion in the park for under $50,000, and it was going to be about $135,000 to replace the water line. So we're saving over $85,000 by drilling new wells instead of replacing the water line. And then meeting weekly with the construction crews from the Highway 75 project. They keep telling me it's supposed to be done by the end of the week, having the base coat done, but it's still not done. But they're telling me that it will be done soon, so it's just the base coat. It's not the whole project from Kansasville down to 142, and they are running a little bit behind. I don't know if they're going to hit their September 13th deadline to finish that whole area, that whole stretch. So. Right now, it is definitely affecting our business. We are counteracting it a little bit by having all the signage on the road construction detours, and we also have the $29 senior special on Monday and Wednesdays that is really bringing in some people. So, last, we've started using the chrono system in the parks and golf to be our timekeeper. So that we can help control labor and payroll costs. It's just it started about 2 weeks ago, and it seems to be working well. We just went through the final payroll today, and so it's going to definitely give us better control over our labor costs. So I'm looking forward to getting more familiar with that.
Hey, Dan, you mentioned someone from your clubhouse that won the Best Golf.
Yeah, he was Bob Tierney. He was a UW Parkside golfer. He graduated last May, and he repeated as the county champion.
But you failed to mention someone from this room that came in second in the ladies.
Right. Congratulations, Gail.
Thank you.
Two guys are guests, and she probably doesn't want to hear about it.
That's why I didn't mention it.
I know who won. All right, thanks, Dan. Highway Director's report, Mr. Sims.
Just a few updates on projects. We're working on our resurfacing program. We're working on Highway O and Highway F right now in the town of Randall. And when we finish that, we're going to move over to Highway L and finish that project. I think I mentioned about putting the binder course on and All the utility work has now been completed on Highway L, so as soon as we're done on O and F, we'll move over to L. When we're done on Highway L, we're going to jump over and start doing some of the work on the golf courses, and we're paving quite a bit of golf course path, both at Petch Pine Springs and Brightondale. So we're going to jump in, get some of that work done, and then we'll return to our county trunk resurfacing program before we do the both the north and the south bike paths will also are going to be done this fall. So lots and lots of work yet to do this year. On some of the other projects, Highway S at the I-94 interchange is scheduled to be open this Friday. On Monday the 8th, the East Frontage Road from Highway 158 to Highway S is going to be closed for reconstruction. And tomorrow I have the final inspection of the 165 and Easy roundabout. So that sometime in the very near future, provided that inspection goes well, that will be open, and then the 165 and Springbrook Road intersection will be completely closed for reconstruction. That's all.
Drew, did we get that little paving machine for the car pass?
We did. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Will the 158 construction, will that affect the intersection at all, 158 and the I, will that close down, or is it just going to be dealing with the frontage road and not going to...
Just the frontage roads at this time. The only impact would be on 158 is that beginning soon they're going to start doing some of the pre-work for the 50 and 158 interchange reconstruction that's going to occur next year. They're, as they did in the previous mainline projects, all the traffic is going to have to be shifted over to one side of the road, so they're going to do all the prep work this fall, and next beginning next spring, the Highway 50 and 158 projects will start. And but 158 interchange will not be affected this year.
Anything else from this perspective?
So you're saying Highway S-142 opens this Friday?
They told us last week that it's going to be this Friday, but subject to a little bit of change.
Comment upon County A in the frontage road?
A in the frontage road, the east frontage road project is scheduled to be completed on the 8th, at which time they're going to switch over to the west side and begin the west frontage road from Highway E to KR. So A is going to remain closed. It's just going to be closed on...
Oh, so the east-west under the interstate will still be closed?
It'll still be closed because they're just flipping over to the west side to start that project.
Comment further upon north-south bike path. What's that entail? Are you doing what type of roadbed?
Both the the existing bike path on the north and the south, we are going to pave that with a 10-foot wide asphalt path and do improvements at all of the road crossings.
So are we talking from state line to county line north of it?
Yeah, our sections are basically from state line to 89th Street on the south end, and then on the north end, I believe it's 35th Street to Highway K.
Oh, so
to
KR.
Everything outside. Well, some of it's actually in the city, but it's, and I think between 35th and Birch Road is in the city, but it's still the county's jurisdiction.
So it's 10-foot wide. You can use your existing crushed stone.
We use the existing crush stone base. It's going to require a little bit of prep work, but and a little bit of widening. But yeah, we're going to resurface with 10-foot.
And how's it done? Is it done as one asphalt or
two layers?
Two layer.
Yeah.
Total thickness?
3 inches.
Great.
2 inches and 1 inch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Where does Brazil?
Yeah, I got a question. You said that 165 and EZ is going to be inspected this week.
need, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to shut down Springbrook?
Correct.
Are they shutting that down from what, 39th Ave?
The actual intersection at Springbrook Road and 165 will be completely closed. So the detour would begin at Springbrook Road and Easy, and then I'm not sure how the state has their official detour route, but you'll be able to get through at 165 and Easy. So. I'm not sure what the official detour is. The state kind of goes off in odd directions, but people will be able to find their way without, you know, having to use 32 or 31 anyways.
So, other guests?
I have a question about the intersection. And is that going to close again?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah, yes, that little piece of old Highway N just west of the, or just east of the East Frontage Road that wasn't done, that's going to be done now by the state.
So how long will it take?
They're not saying, I'm suspecting it's going to be November-ish.
Why do I feel like all these questions have been about roads that all of these people live on? Just like that. Anything else for Mr. Sisson? This committee can be very pleased that it was at our urging that we looked into buying a paving machine that would do carpet paths and things, and also very thankful that some politicians that were trying to exclude us from being able to do that saw the right path, and otherwise, if that no one passed, we wouldn't be paving all car paths because we'd be having to put that all out the bid, which was too high. So it was these little things that save people money and also give our paving crew some work that somebody else would be doing. So thank you, Mr. Sisman. Facilities, these are all updates the way it looks.
I'll take for the courthouse and Molinaro Narrow building restoration project, and I gave a similar handout to what we had previously, updating on what work is taking place in what zones. Overall, we seem to be going along pretty well. And for the courthouse, we have zones 5, 7 through 9, 11. It's working on the limestone walls below the parapet, both the grinding and pipe pointing and limestone restoration of certain stones that are either have to be replaced or repaired because of damage. Zones 1 through 4, we have parapet wall work going on. That's proceeding. The scaffolding is if you've gone down by the courthouse, you can see now we've got the entire front end, or a good part of the front end surrounded with scaffolding. So we'll be working our way to that portion of the courthouse, the southern exposure. And of course, we on zone 5 with the east stairs, we've run into it wasn't sound concrete underneath the stairs as the old drawings and everything showed. They had concrete further down below, but they had like 14 inches of not sound concrete, and that's been there forever. So a little bit of a change, but it doesn't hold back any other part of the restoration. So we just have to go down. Mosey's actually being called in to saw cut and demo down to the solid, and we'll work our way back up from there. So that's on the courthouse side. On Molinaro, you can see we've got the different sections also. Zones 1 through 10, we're working on all the limestone walls below the parapet, just like both grinding and tuck pointing, and any limestone blocks that need to be repaired or replaced. And then zones 9 through 14, the parapet wall work continues. So it's coming along fairly orderly other than the stairs, but that shouldn't cause any big delays. We did lose a couple more days in inclement weather from 7.5 to 9.5, but that's still within our window, let's say, opportunity. The employment number actually stayed the same between the last meeting and the one person, but they came back up to the 27 total, five from Illinois, seven from Kenosha County, and 15 others from within Wisconsin. We did, again, with the big rainstorms, we did have some more roof leak issues. Again, the roof leaks, it's a very old roof, and as they're doing work up there, things are getting shifted around, new stresses on it, and, you know, there's more openings are being created, and we really don't know those. We inspect for some of them, we catch them, but some of them we just don't know until we have a big rain. But they've addressed them right away. They keep a crew on board, even though in one instance we knew it was going to rain in the afternoon. They let the majority of the crew go home, and yet they keep a couple guys here just in case we do have leaks so they can attack them directly. And then, you know, we'll go to the point of actually some of the water pools in certain areas that haven't leaked before, they'll actually put a pump in those areas to get the water out. So they've been very proactive. And from talking to other people that have done this, it's not unusual to have this kind of problem with these older roofs. But again, the whole roof will be replaced at the end of this project. So that's the good news in it. Also, they've ground out the good part of the building, and we've done some sampling of mortars, mortar colors, trying to get the right color. And there's historic, you have to stay within the historic guidelines too for this building. So we've done some of those. We're waiting for those to cure and to make sure that we get an even consistent color for the mortars.
Parking structure?
Ray gave me that report today.
Okay.
There currently is an architect engineer selection process that's being reviewed by the state right now, and that's the process of selecting the architect engineer is what's under review. The actual selection hasn't begun yet. The last phase of the project that the architect and engineer is going to work on is to install the control gates, address lighting issues, and address security issues. If all goes well, the plan is to get the architect engineer beginning by the 31st of this month, but given all of the review approval processes required with through the state and federal funding, all the work's not expected to be done until 2012. And they're continuing to work with finance and the DOT to determine the funding date details for availability of funds for these final phases of the project, and then also for eventually closing out the project.
Thank you, Gary. Brookside demo project.
I'll take that. The contract was issued to Maceman and Sons for the demolition. The subcontractor for the asbestos is Safe Abatement. The paperwork has been filed with the DNR, and we expect to have the approval to go ahead with the abatement. We should have it by this Friday. If we do, the abatement company will start the abatement right away. It's expected to take 30 days to do the entire abatement of the building. And hopefully by the end of the month, Maceman will be in and start doing the demolition work. Right now, they're doing some of the prep work. They're doing some salvage work. They've cleaned out the boiler room, which we're going to turn into a parking garage for Brookside, some extra storage area. So that area is clear. The debris and the asbestos debris will be taken to waste management. We have an arrangement worked out with them. We have some manifests. We'll track every load going there. And I have the demo permit paperwork for the city. We had a couple other items we needed. I'll stop in there tomorrow, and I'll get it processed. And hopefully by the end of next week, we can have the demo permit.
So that's not too far off schedule.
No.
Oh, very good.
did come up with a layout that accommodated their current desks and furniture, and still we had to enlarge a couple of the offices bigger than we originally had it, but we still tried to reuse the existing conference room, reuse the former director of IT's office and one of his assistant's offices. We brought it down to the Corporation Council, and they had some concerns about some of the workspaces, some additional workspaces they needed, so, and some file storage. So we kind of took those concerns back to the architect. I did go back. We did have the architect before this last turnaround. I did go back through the notes. It had come up in a previous meeting, and I had to go back in my recollection. I got this mixed up with the Register of Deeds. Actually, we did have funding in there to replace this carpet. And I did go back and look at the quotation. That got taken out of the Register of Deeds, but it did make it out through here. Having said that, we didn't have a whole lot for the walls and everything with the larger furniture, so we're kind of balancing that out through now, and also, like I said, with some of the workspace issues for the files. So we still hope to have it all done and have them in there by November 1st, but we're going back to see if we can tweak this and accommodate some of the workspace issues.
What about the 60-foot desk?
Well, no,
it was 14 feet.
Not large. I think it's grown. No, that actually, we turned out that fit with a small modification. It actually did fit, so.
Hard part is getting down the elevator.
No, it's not one piece, I found out.
It's three pieces.
It's three pieces.
Yeah.
That's how Frank denied it.
Yeah.
Because I said I heard about this 12-foot desk. His water is a credenza. It's this way.
For Corporation Common Remodel Project, refresh my memory, this is located where now?
The Corporation Council is in the old Historical Society House on 3rd Avenue.
Right.
And now that IT department moved from the basement of the courthouse, they were in the southeast corner of the basement of the courthouse, and they got moved to the addition of the public safety building. So
these are plans for the southeast corner of the
correct.
Courthouse.
Correct.
Wasn't there some issue that came up in committee about other departments storing files there or something that was making use of that space? Is that still an issue, or what's happening with that?
There was, I think, IT actually had two, their department was cut, not in half, but in the northwest corner, IT department was also there at the end of the hallway. They're kind of opposite ends diagonally. And that area in the end became the victim witness unit.
Okay.
And it actually worked out that because they had a bathroom in there and area, and also that they could accommodate the back half, they had offices that could accommodate, they had some files for the DA, at least short term, for storage, and we didn't have to really do any remodeling there.
Right.
And whereas we would have had to do that with the mail room. So that was kind of a ready-made thing for the victim witness unit to go in. They had the furniture and everything donated. It worked out very nicely. But that, I think, is they had some old IT files and things like that in there that needed to be taken out.
Okay, so that's theirs.
So your recollection is correct, and that was.
So the walls had backed across and then to the architect to try to work with Corporation Council to redesign that space a little bit better for some work areas yet?
Correct, yes.
Who's the architect?
John Wellenkamp with the CUNY Architects.
And proceeded completion date end of November?
Yes.
And then just to refresh, Supervisor Dan and I, Courthouse Molinaro, that concludes, when's our timeline to be done with that?
Actually, February, I want to say February 10th.
Early next year, 12th.
Yes. 12th, yes.
Over 9 days behind them.
Correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we'll move on. Register of deeds, victim, witness, secured.
I'll take that one. That was from our previous budget and grounds committee, and it had come up, and I had laid out in a handout. I kind of went through. Ray's not here today, but we still wanted to bring it up, and I kind of laid out. I want to start a little bit about the history, and kind of laid out what kind of got us here today, and moving forward, which kind of broaden the discussion and go into what Mr. Grady would like to see for properly working this into looking at the budget and the design. But just as far as the history, there was previous security system, at least down in the Register of Deeds, and it was previous to myself. Ron Henning can probably speak a little to the history of it.
It was just a little standalone two-camera analog system that went to a DVR and pretty much worked on about a 30-day cycle. If we needed to review anything, we would burn it to disk. Otherwise, after 30 days, it would just tape over itself.
Now, the system was taken out a number of years ago, but the domes are still up there. And they wanted the dome still there to have people at least think that there's security going on. So, in fact, I think I listed that down at number three. But the kind of one point, I think, after looking into the video systems, excluding the jail, all the video systems are not monitored by someone. They're just recorded.
Right.
And if the need be, or if something comes up, the video is reviewed and then burned to a disk and then kept if there's an incident or something, or if there's a question. But as Ron said, you know, depending on the system, it's either 10 to 30 days that the memory is recorded over. So in the jail, it's viewed in real time by someone, but in all these other systems, it's not. The Register of Deeds, that was part of the requirement that the Register of Deeds department had for us, was to redesign the department so that they had more direct viewing of the people by the personnel. And actually, with the placement of the Register, Louise's office, too, looking over that. So we position people that both be right next to the counter and that have direct viewing access to the documents. So that was one of their requirements when we designed that. The cash, the checks, everything like that, talking to them, they do their procedures for balancing and double checking and deposit that to the treasurer upstairs nightly. And like I said, there are empty camera domes in place in the Register of Deeds. The victim witness area, again, in the basement of the courthouse now, does have a key card secure door area. You'll need like an ID we have, but they make up separate cards for the victim witness people that are down there. The security at the courthouse with the entrances has metal detectors and x-rays. Sheriff's deputies patrolling the courthouse. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't or can't have a video system in there at all. But these were just some of it, sort of how it got here without a system. Having said that, like I said, we're going to follow up on this further as far as Chairman Grady had sent through. We had some quotations for the video cam security system that it's integrated throughout the county. That can go back to a main server or have its own standalone system. And of course, it was a little more expensive. Chairman Grady had forwarded some links to other systems that are actually very affordable. And that's where we kind of have to see, do we need this going back to a central system or not? Like we could hook it up going back to the PSP. It's a little more expensive. It uses the CAN system equipment. Can we go with a standalone system that's on its own? The only thing we probably can't do is go wireless. Some of the systems have wireless, but in the courthouse and the admin building, there's so much rebar and stuff, especially in the basement. The probably would have worked, but I don't think that's a huge issue. If we have to run, even if you had wireless for the camera, we'd have to have an electrician put an outlet in by the camera, so we might as well have power going over the coaxial cable anyway to the camera. So there is opportunities. Exactly, you know, if it's decided, if it's necessary, there is choices which way to go.
Why don't you look at different ways to budget it, see what costs are. We haven't even decided if there's a need, correct? So the courthouse security is one thing compared to the register of deeds. I mean, actually two different buildings, two different, you're talking victim witness. Has a register of deeds registered a need?
Yeah, I guess the answer could be yes, and the fact they used to have a panic button system underneath the counter. And I guess some years ago, previous to me, that panic button system was going to a private security company, and for a number of reasons, it got left by the wayside over time. Having said that, I think the Register of Deeds would always like, you know, probably like more security down there, maybe something to that effect. Having said that, now, before, the Register of Deeds was kind of tucked around a corner, almost a little isolated from view. Now we've got all six people sitting behind the counter. If something were to happen right there, one of the six people should be able to dial 911. So it would really be a balancing act of whether that button behind the counter is with everybody right there and their phones available, if that is really a needed option against our...
Without getting into a lot of discussion on this evening, is the camera idea to deter someone from doing it, from reaching and grabbing somebody? Is that what the idea is?
Actually, the camera domes are out in the...
No, this new idea. Not the old camera domes.
Yeah.
But is the theory that that's going to deter a crime, or is it...
And actually, probably Chairman Grady, I think he's Louise has talked to him a little bit about it, too, but it seems like it's both things that have been mentioned, document-wise and the money-wise. The only problem with the documents is... It would take a very, very high-end camera and DVR system to be able to see if you know, over that big area or looking down, or you'd have to have multiple ones to see if they were actually taking, you know, a scrap piece of paper or something, or if it was an actual title. The other problem with that is you probably wouldn't discover it for if the videotape is rewritten every 10 to 30 days. Usually people don't refinance their mortgage or sell a house, you know, for years and maybe decades. So in that case, it might be tough to view that. Having said that, I haven't heard of a particular incident that they've found yet, and maybe I just haven't asked the right questions where they've been missing a document.
But they're concerned. According to you, they're concerned.
You know, it's never come up as a single subject, but it's come up in a broader sense. I think, like I said, Chairman Grady can probably speak to it a little more. I think if they addressed him specifically with some security.
There have been concerns in the past, both with the security aspect of having money down there in an area that's not readily, you know, accessed by the public. You know, where people can look in and so forth. It's kind of a closed little environment. And then recently with the documents, although they have been more accessible visually, we still would have no record of someone in there and did something. Who was the person that actually came in and was the perpetrator?
Yeah.
So it is a dual-fold thing, at least conceivably, an ounce of prevention to say if there is under surveillance and then record someone would be a potential perpetrator. And the same philosophy with the witness protection area. Really, under ideal circumstances, normal circumstances, a key card should be fine. That's really good. You get a high-profile case, you get someone where you have perpetrators, gang members, things like that, and they could easily slip in behind a person who has a key card and take control of the area. No one would know it. So it's one of these things, it's always a balancing act. You're looking at the amount of money it would cost to do this. We don't have the information. We don't know how much it would cost, we don't know how much equipment's involved.
That's what we're asking them to do.
Right, so that's the impetus behind it.
For budget time. Yeah.
I think Ray alluded to it. They did have a placeholder, at least that higher dollar amount of the cane system in there right now. Drilled down.
Right. What we want to do in this committee is to at least review it and give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down prior to budget.
But, right.
So we're proactive. We're not behind the.
So that's the plan.
Good. We'll move on to the exterior doors of the detention center.
We're still waiting for the engineer to come back with the specs. I talked to him today. He should have everything in place for both the exterior doors and the plumbing. Should have into the specifications to me by Friday, in which case I'll do the paperwork, get it into purchasing on Monday, and hopefully we can have everything bid out by the following week and hopefully get everything underway before the end of August.
And then the isolation plumb.
Same thing. Same engineer is doing specifications. I should have all of that by Friday.
I don't remember. What is the isolation
plumb? Isolation from when the building was built, there were a couple of valves to shut down both the hot water system and the domestic plumbing. What we want to do is get it where we can isolate each dorms individually, so if we have to work on anything, we're not affecting the whole building.
And if people remember, the exterior door is a waterfront. That's okay.
Yes.
No new business for facilities? Any other matters anyone has? If not,
motion to adjourn.
Moved and seconded to adjourn. All in favor of that? Opposed? Thank you very much, folks. Oh, and don't forget your, when you've been getting your parking open space plans, you're becoming a chum this year. This is a